Round the outside. Guess who's back? Back again. Tim Flo's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? Welcome to another episode of Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy. Hi, I'm your host, Felicia Baxter. I'm just had to leave town to clear my mind. I'm actually podcasting from the Gulf Shores of Alabama. I've never been down here before, and I can't understand why I never discovered this beautiful place. I guess when you think of the South, you think of a bunch of backwoods people, but there is no way that I have not experienced this level of beauty since I worked in Destin. And I wasn't able to enjoy that much because I was actually working. Well, as usual, and I'm also podcasting late. There has been a lot has happened in the past week. I just could not concentrate, and I needed to blow the cobwebs out of my mind. When you are allowed solitude and you utilize the solitude for your advantage, you're able to see clearly. And this, even though I'm not a fan of Slim Shady, I like the driving beat. And it's also this week or last week, Dr. Dre is recovering from a brain aneurysm, and I wish him the best. I'm also going to be talking about NASA SpaceX launch and giving spoilers from Star Trek Discovery. The season finale was this past Thursday, and I'm also going to read the feelings of First Lady Michelle Obama's on the wake of the riots that went down on Wednesday. And I hope you are in a better place as I am, and you will enjoy this episode. And thank you again for tuning in. Everyone has been saying a lot of words, and we know words mean something. Our nation's capital was basically under attack by a bunch of insurrectionists, and we're still reeling from that. Iran, China, and Russia are tripping because they see the hypocrisy of it all. Black folks were like, you know what? We knew something was about to pop off, but we just didn't know it was this bad. But in spite of all of this, things are still happening. I mean, they're still launching SpaceX is still on the move, launching payloads into space, getting satellites out there so we can communicate better. I don't know if it allows the spies to listen to us, but we're not saying a whole bunch, so there you go. It was so bad, I really wanted to be on a stowaway on one of those SpaceX launches. When I was initially looking up photos to post for this part or for the notes of the podcast, I was interested in finding, I started reading little tidbits about the SpaceX program because I was specifically looking for photos of the launch that happened on the 7th, and it was a night launch. I think I did a pretty good job of posting from Cape Canaveral and also from Mayor Eric Garcetti's image that he captured in 2018, which seems like so long ago. And I also just went back of the summer of 1992 when I was an intern at NASA at their Space Life Sciences Training Program, how fascinated I was about all the entire program itself. The size that I am now, I could never fit into one of those little pods, or even my fro can't even fit into the space, International Space, the International Space Station. But what I do know is I still have a great fascination with space. I was reading, as I was saying, when I was looking for photos for the podcast notes, I ran across something called Rideshare. It's a SpaceX venture. For a cool $1 million, you can take the Uber to the stars to get your satellite into space. It's $1 million for the first 200 kilograms, 5K per additional kilograms. Now, I'm assuming that most of these payloads are in the thousands of kilograms. So every time one of those mugs launches successfully, he's getting like $100 million a launch. Technically, I'm thinking, if I'm doing the math correctly, how wild all of this seems to me. And why couldn't the U.S. government have basically commercialized and monetized NASA? They could have been making mad loot. This is on par with when every time, like OPEC, and how the Saudi royal family gets millions of dollars a day every time they pump in oil out of the ground. This is one man in charge of, and every 4 months, because there's a whole itinerary and guidelines for the Uber to the stars, this rideshare. If they launch on time every 4 months and it's reusable, he's making several $100 million per launch. So if you think there are at least 4 launches per year, he's going to make what, $500 million to $1 billion per year. He doesn't need Tesla to be profitable because he has satellite. We got the technology to get these payloads into space, and the same technology that's going to get us to the moon and beyond. Absolutely amazing. And you can say what you can say about him. He has some very narrow-minded views of the world, but his view, Elon Musk's view of the future and rocket ships and technology, is basically genius. Do I think he is a little bit to the left or to the right for that matter? Yes. But you got to be on some next level crazy shit to be able to conceptualize this and to put into fruition. We couldn't figure it out, but he did. Absolutely amazing. Also, I did a previous talk, podcast about Habitat 2 and radishes in space. There is a photo in the podcast notes of astronaut Michael Hopkins, a part of the Artemis crew, that one of the things I think is brilliant about the astronauts, they are scientists primarily. And they actually get to not only do the maintenance on these pods, but they actually are running the experiments. It's like a big time biology. They're like biology lab techs, gathering data and compiling the data for the sake of science. I think it's absolutely amazing. Also, everybody has an Instagram handle, and the NASA Hubble telescope is no exception. Dudes, they got 3.8 million followers. Wow, an inanimate object has more followers or has as many followers as Beyonce. How crazy is that? But yay, science. I actually posted or included the Instagram of the Hubble spacecraft in the notes for the show. And I also made the Orion Nebula image that I took directly from NASA.gov, which is public domain. And you can also, all of us have access to all of the compilations of the Hubble Space Telescope. They were, people have been saying for years how much the money that the government spent on launching Hubble into the atmosphere, we are seeing, we are, all of us are reaping the benefits of science at its best, technology at its best. This particular nebula, or I thought it was an artist's rendition. It's not. This is actually created. The picture that I have in the podcast notes is actually created by the Hubble Space Telescope, as well as the Spitzer Space Telescope, directly from the writings from NASA.gov. They're the gaseous swirls of hydrogen, sulfur, and hydrocarbon cradle, a collection of infant stars in this composite image of the Orion Space Nebula, as seen by the Hubble Space Telescope and the Spitzer Space Telescope. Together, the two telescopes expose carbon-rich molecules in the cosmic cloud of this star formation factory located 1,500 light years away. Wow. Hubble's ultraviolet and visible light view reveal hydrogen sulfur gas that have been heated and ionized by intense ultraviolet radiation from the massive stars, collectively known as the trapezium. Meanwhile, Spitzer's infrared view exposes carbon-rich molecules in the cloud. Together, the telescopes expose the stars in the Orion as a rainbow of dots sprinkled throughout the image. And it's crazy because these glorious colors, and I can't, you can't make this up. That's why I thought, was it an artist's rendition? But this is a computer, as I said, a computer composite of what the data that is being sent by these telescopes. And it's absolutely beautiful. And I wonder if they actually have a poster of this. I would love to get this not only recreated, but also framed because it's so beautiful. But I also thought it was apropos because in the next section of the podcast, I'm going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery, the death of the Orion Green Bitch, and it's just crazy how beautiful this nebula is and how evil and dark, evil and horrible. I'm not going to say dark because we're going to take out all racist references to malevolence that I can possibly do. Is that a porpoise? See, that's when you actually get, you can get distracted as you sit on the coast and you watch. You get to daydream and you notice things. And I actually think those are diving seagulls. And not, because I thought I saw something gray, but I don't have on my glasses, so I can't be sure. But as I was saying, trying to take out all negative connotations of dark and black, etc. We need to be better in how we reference other people. We need to think a little bit differently. But what I was saying about the Orion Syndicate, the green chick gets toe up. And I just wanted to make a comparison of the beauty of the Orion Nebula and the ugliness of the green chick. And she had to go, and Michael Burnham was her demise. So that's where I'm going to pause, right here, in anticipation of the next section, Star Trek Corner, multiple spoilers. I think you're going to dig it.
Lieutenant's log. Stardate. I don't know, actually. To be honest, I don't even know why I'm recording this. I guess, in case we don't make it. We're getting ready to take back Discovery. Osyra has the advantage on every level, and I'm scared. Not something I'd have said before. I used to think fear was weak, but now I see that it takes strength to admit you're afraid and keep going. I found myself wondering if that's how it was after the burn. Everyone afraid of what happened, all the unknowns to come, but still, they kept going. Thing is, you're never in it alone. They weren't then, I'm not now. We've got each other, and we'll get through this.
It's actually been a minute since I've felt good. Is that the way you should say it? About the last several weeks of Star Trek. It culminated into the season finale, which is... it's a part two. And then I had to go back to say that, wait a minute, did I actually see part one? Because it says The Hope That Is You, part two. It's basically a perfect bookend, because That Hope Is You, part one, was the season opener. We meet the commissioned Starfleet liaison, and he actually is reinstalled back at the season finales, episode 13. But this has also been a week where I started doing, including the Instagram post, not only of the Star Trek logs, which you just listened to, which I think the Lieutenant Detmer, for whatever reason, I never knew Homegirl's name. I knew she was, I don't know if she was formerly a Borg or she lost her eye in one of the battles, and that's just the prosthesis. I think that happened maybe season one or season two. I don't remember. I'm going to have to look that up now that it's ended. But I also started including or thought about including the ships of Star Trek. And there were three that I actually found wonderful. I didn't even have to try to go to DeviantArt to actually locate them. But the USS Endurance and the USS Sentinel. And you'll notice that a lot of this artwork is not only included on DeviantArt, but also you can actually be a commander of one of the ships as far as on Star Trek Online. You can see NC-1701, there is an A, and then that other ship. Let's see, what is that one? And then, of course, there are this, I think this one is just beautiful. Starfleet Best by the art by David Metetsis. I think I actually included, because that looks like a take on the Discovery or the Imperial ship from the alternative universe. I actually included that in a previous episode, but I'm also very glad that I included all three of these posts in this week's Star Trek Corner. I would actually, if you have an Instagram feed, I would actually consider following Star Trek logs, because the words of Detmer actually resound or ring true this week on the logs, and also the ships that were actually posted on the ships of Star Trek also are just also pretty amazing too. So I think you'll enjoy the artistry of that particular the artistry that is exemplified or illustrated by these wonderful artists as far as the game. The Hope That Is You, Part 2. I hope you guys weren't waiting on me to basically give you a play-by-play of the last episode of the series. Because, as I told you guys, that I could not wrap my head around a lot of things. I needed to clear out the cobwebs before I felt confident and strong enough to be able to speak about it. Yes, it struck me as like, why are y'all doing a part two? Did I see part one? Duh. Yes, you did see part one. And I actually rewatched part one today, right when I decided that I was going to actually, when I completed the creating the podcast script or the podcast notes, I actually decided that I was going to rewatch that episode, and I did not realize just how brilliant it actually was. This is where Michael uses her mother's suit to actually jump forward into the future. Fault of each of their own, she bumps into Book's ship. He is actually on a one-man mission to preserve endangered species. He actually is a pretty advanced empath. And they meet. She kicks his butt. And it was just like one of those episodes that I was like, ugh. It's not as bad as a stand, but I wasn't all that impressed with it when I originally watched it. But I was with it because I liked the swashbuckling action of it all. I found it interesting that Osira, the Orion, she was green and got destroyed, as well as the witch that is in The Wizard of Oz. I don't know if it was intentional. I just drew that parallel because I drew the parallels as I was able to clear my mind and think beyond what I was actually going to say for this part of the podcast. So, in summary, Discovery is unable to jump away with Stamets. Just to recap last week's episode 12, they get captured, or Osira gets on and basically steals Discovery. Burnham sends him out and hides him in subspace because they have to protect the technology at all costs. He is thoroughly pissed off at her because he wants them to jump back to the nebula to save his husband and Adira. It's not going to happen. She made an executive decision that, no, they could not risk that technology falling into the hands of someone clearly that did not need the technology, did not have to get to the Syndicate or the Emerald Chain. She was able to make the hard call. I don't think that Saru could have made this call. And a previous version of Michael Burnham probably could not make that call, but she also understood what her duty was and what the mission was. She had to protect that technology at all costs. Because the Federation did not know of the planet or the massive amounts of dilithium that not only was the source of the burn, because Homeboy... Sakaal, he basically gets irreversibly changed. He is the source of the burn, which sets off a chain of events that leads to the destruction of the Federation. And it was clear that they needed to not only know the source of it so they can understand how to neutralize it and allow the Federation to get back together again. Discovery was instrumental in the ability to be able to deliver that dilithium that is in this particular nebula, which does look a lot like the Orion Nebula that I actually posted earlier, but that's neither here nor there. A lot of these things, it seems like art is imitating actual life. But one of the most amazing things is Saru takes his leave and escorts Sukal back to post-burn Kaminar. Osira, the Green Witch, is killed by Michael Burnham. Beats her ass and then pops her. Beautiful fight scene. I would go watch it. You can get that fight scene probably. I'm actually going to look for that fight scene to see if CBS actually posts a legal excerpt just from the fight scene, because the fight scene was off chain. And it ends with everyone being reunited with their loved ones. Of course, Michael Burnham and Book, they actually reconfirm their love for each other. At the last minute, Osira, in her zeal to control, basically turns off life support for the lower decks. But, of course, another black woman, and I can't remember her name, crawls, saved by technology, the little robot thing, to basically drop them out of warp, the nacelle. They basically demagnetize the nacelle and it comes off and it basically plunges them out of warp. Michael is able to kick Osiris's butt and then basically retake over control of the computer and then be able to jump with the usage of Booker, use the technology that only before that Stamets could have used. Actually, he was able to activate it and do the black alert, and they were able to jump back to the nebula. Picks them up, saves the day, and then goes back. And with the collapse of the Emerald Chain, planets begin to rejoin the Federation. When I produce this part of the podcast, I try to find posters and clips, if I haven't created them myself, for in particular to round out and flesh out the podcast notes. But what I did find is several things. Number one, I don't think that, before I get to that, because I'm very reflective because of most recent events, but because of the demeanor of Saru and his resistance to thinking outside of the box, I don't think he is capable of navigating all of the intricacies of rebuilding the Federation in the 31st century. But a black woman raised by Vulcans and molded by Philippa Giorgio might just be and have what it takes, because obviously she is promoted to captain, and she's promoted to captain of Discovery. I'm not so sure what to think about those uniforms, but finally, and Giorgio, Captain Giorgio, pronounced it that she, the only one that didn't know that she was prepared to take that position was Burnham. And it was her destiny, and she knows it's her destiny to lead, because the whole crew followed her to the 31st century. So why can't she continue to lead the Discovery? She got the work done. She may not do it like you would expect it, but she get her done. And she can make the hard choices. That's why she had made the decision to protect Lieutenant Stamets, even though he was pissed. How could you not jump back to save my husband? Well, because in the bigger picture of thing, the needs of the many outweigh that one, the need of you. That's the problem. That's the issue. Just start right there. Unfortunately, if it hadn't, they weren't able to pull it off, they would have perished, but they knew what the possibility of that was. And why would you want her to make that decision? It's selfish, and you're just going to have to get over it, because now she's your captain, so suck it up, bro. But when I started, as I was researching the to flesh out this part of the episode, not only did I draw a parallel to the Green Witch in The Wizard of Oz and her destruction, but I also started to reflect on the storylines of the original Star Trek series and every spinoff from Next Generation, Picard. One of my favorites is Deep Space Nine, and now Discovery. And why is a lot of people, especially some of the critics, having so much trouble with this series? Because again, the cast and the production and the crews are a reflection of the society. That's what Star Trek does well. And in this particular episode, women and men of color are in leadership roles and are reflecting an idealized society, fighting against evil and corruption. I don't know if these reviewers' egos are so fragile, you can't see the beauty and the how progressive this series is, and how they are seeking to represent such a simple message of hope and of unity. And I would also further speculate, before you cast a disparaging review, reflect on why you are player hating this series so much. Is it because you're not seeing the usual white dude doing some of these same things? And a black lady is doing it? You only want them at the comm and not actually command a major Star Trek ship? What is wrong with y'all? I don't know, but it seems as if CBS, just like Lucille Ball in the original series, sees past all of that. And I'm grateful for them that we actually get a chance to be reflective and have someone that looks like me, maybe one of my legs because I'm a big girl, but that looks like a huge sector of the general population here in the United States kicking butt and taking names, I think is brilliant. And that's why I'm looking at, and I'm going to probably re-binge watch the series and take a different perspective. Yes, most, if you look at it overall, some of the Star Trek storylines can be kind of lame. But I think it's more than that. Representation, even in the lameness, I think is absolutely brilliant. And that's why I'm still a Star Trek fan, and major props to the showrunner and Sonequa Green and everyone that has anything to do with this series. I need to see more of Book. I need to see how their Booker's and relationship progresses. If it doesn't get past the fourth season, I won't be too shocked, because most of the run, they run for about 4 to 7 seasons. But if they keep up this particular storyline, utilize all of that money to its amazing benefit, I think all of us will just be really into just the special effects and some of the other. Keep up the action. Storylines, can be a little janky. But that's not why we watch it anyways. We look at it for the technology and fight scenes. And they do that in spades. And I'm grateful that they allow us to watch this. Sure. am still looking and always looking for positive images of African-American women. Stacey Abrams and her feat after her defeat when her election for governor was stolen from her by that fool Kemp in Georgia. She basically said, watch this. In 2 years, she, and with the help of Reverend Raphael Warnock, took Georgia, flipped it blue. No one had did that since a white man from Arkansas, Bill Clinton, basically did it during his election twice. So with that said, then we have the shenanigans of the last week. The win of the Democrats, a young man who, youngest of 12 children, whose mother used to pick cotton from the projects in Savannah, she voted for her youngest son. Only in America can crazy stuff like that happen. But all of this, and Ossoff, it's cool, he's Jewish, whatever, but I don't mean to say whatever because that's rude, but the wins for the Democrats in Georgia is real. Completely overshadowed by the heartbreak of those mouth-breathing fools overrunning the Capitol. I did not want to start the top of the hour completely fussing about this, but I think we have had so many people that have written things and can say my feelings and exemplify my feelings on a whole different level of eloquently and succinctly putting into words how a lot of people, mostly Black people, feel. And this is what she wrote. Very long Instagram post. I woke up yesterday elated by the news of Reverend Raphael Warnock's election victory. He'll be Georgia's first Black senator. And I was heartened by the idea that the senator, senior pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church, the home parish of Dr. King and a spiritual organizational hub during the civil rights movement, would be representing his state in the U.S. Senate. In just a few hours, though, my heart had fallen harder and faster than I can remember. Like all of you, I watch as a gang, organized, violent, and mad, they'd lost the election. An election laid siege to the U.S. Capitol. They set up gallows. They proudly waved the traitor's flag of the Confederacy through the halls. They desecrated the center of American government. And once authorities finally gained control of the situation, these rioters and gang members were led out of the building, not in handcuffs, but free to carry on with their days. The day was a fulfillment of the wishes of an infantile and unpatriotic president. Oh, she went in on his orange-hued ass. Lord, who can't handle the truth of his own failures. And the wreckage lays at the feet of a party and media apparatus that gleefully cheered him on, knowing full well the possibility of consequences like these. I can't imagine her two kids if they got shenanigans and how she will read them. Kind of like this. It all left me with so many questions. Questions about the future, questions about security, extremism, propaganda, and more. But there's one question I just can't shake. What if these rioters had looked like the folks who go to Ebenezer Baptist Church every Sunday? Lord, Lord. What would have been different? I think we all know that answer. This summer's Black Lives Matter protests were an overwhelmingly peaceful movement, our nation's largest demonstrations ever, bringing together people of every race and class and encouraging millions to re-examine their own assumptions and behavior. And yet, In city after city, day after day, we saw peaceful protesters met with brute force. We saw cracked skulls and mass arrests, law enforcement pepper spraying its way through a peaceful demonstration for a presidential photo op. And for those who call others unpatriotic for simply taking a knee in silent protest, for those who wonder why we need to be reminded that Black lives matter at all, yesterday made it painfully clear that certain Americans are in fact allowed to denigrate the flag and symbols of our nation. They've just got to look the right way. The white way. She didn't write that. That's me adding to it. What do all those folks have to say now? Seeing the gulf between the responses to yesterday's riot and this summer's peaceful protest and the larger movement for racial justice is so painful. It hurts. And I cannot think about moving on or turning the page until we reckon with the reality of what we saw yesterday. True progress will be possible only once we acknowledge that this disconnect exists and take steps to repair it. And that also means coming to grips with the reality that millions voted for a man so obviously willing to burn our democracy down for his own ego. I hurt for our country, and I wish I had all the solutions to make things better. I wish I had the confidence that people who know better will act like it for more than a news cycle or two. Damn. All I know is that now is a time for true patriotism. Now is a time for those who voted for this president to see the reality of what they've supported and publicly and forcefully rebuke him and the actions of that mob. Now is the time for Silicon Valley companies to stop enabling this monstrous behavior and go even further than they have already by permanently banning this man from their platforms and putting in place policies to prevent their technology from being used by the nation's leader to fuel insurrection. And if we have any hope of improving this nation, now is the time for swift and serious consequences for the failure of leadership that led to yesterday's shame. Thankfully, even in the darkness, there are glimmers of hope. It's something I imagine Reverend Warnock has preached about before, and I'm still heartened beyond belief that he's headed to Washington. I'm glad his fellow Georgian, John Ossoff, is too. And together, they'll help give control of Congress back to the only party that's shown that it can put our democracy above its own short-term political fortunes. I pray that every American, especially those who disagree with them, will give our new Congress, President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris, the chance to lead us in a better direction. But make no mistake, the work of putting America back together, of truly repairing what is broken, isn't the work of any individual politician or political party. It's up to each of us to do our part, to reach out, to listen, and to hold tight to the truth and values that have always led this country forward. It will be an uncomfortable, sometimes painful process. But if we enter into it with an honest and unwavering love of our country, then maybe we can finally start to heal. You got that right. And I love this. She basically read everybody and put us all on blast. So what you gonna do? I know what I'm going. And that's how I'm going to end this episode of Tennessee Fro is Reading. I am clear of my way forward. I'm glad I got the opportunity to clear out the cobwebs and hopefully create a really good and thoughtful show. And I want to leave you with an everlasting ray of hope. I hope it was good enough and it met that challenge. However, as always, there's always someone that need a bag of gummy penises or a glitter bomb to just brighten up your day. You can send it anonymously at shipabagofdicks.com/tenfrogotjokes using the same as the promo code tenfrogotjokes to get a percentage off of your order and shipping. And I hope you will enjoy me. I will be posting probably intermittently over the next couple of days to get caught up for what I didn't do this past week. And again, as always, thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I've enjoyed creating it. Thank you for listening. Bye now.